Well, hello everyone. My name is Ben Leibovich. Thank you for tuning in. Realizing that we live very, very busy lives, I really do appreciate and value you taking the time out of your schedule to join this teleseminar. If you are listening in, then I think I know two things about you. One, you must be a member of Cash Flow Freedom Builders, since this teleseminar is only available to the members. Thank you and congratulations. I think you will find a lot of value in being a member. And two, you must be serious about your financial future, and you must be willing to be proactive. Again, congratulations. These are difficult times, guys. But as often happens, these are also times of abundant opportunity, but only for those who can see it. During this teleseminar, I want you to email me your questions at ben@justaskbenwhy.com. You can access this email through my website, which is www.justaskbenwhy.com, or you can use the chat box located at the bottom right corner of your screen, whatever is more convenient. At the end of this program, for about the last 15 or 20 minutes, I will try to answer as many of the questions as time will permit. I won't be able to get to all, but I'll get to as many as I can. I will, however, answer all of the questions that come in via email or a telephone, if you give me your telephone and you prefer to speak to me in person on the phone this way. Also, in your email, you can indicate whether or not you actually want to be on the telephone asking your question. We can do this because I can dial you up when the time comes. I can dial your number and you can be on the phone with me. This would allow you to ask follow-up questions, and it does create more of a conversational format, which I welcome. After the seminar, however, the email and the blog, both of which can be accessed through my website, become the vehicles through which we stay in contact. Just to put our conversation on the right track relative to our frame of mind, let me give you a quote. It's a quote that comes from Arthur Schopenhauer, who was a German philosopher. He was born probably around 1785, 1790, somewhere in there, and lived through the middle of 19th century. And he said, "Talent hits a target no one else can hit. Genius hits a target no one else can see." Guys, conventional wisdom hits a target that everyone can see and everyone can hit. We're not looking for conventional results here. We're looking for extraordinary results. We're looking definitely, at least, for better than the average results. I'm not suggesting here that you have to be some kind of a genius, nor am I suggesting that I am one. Not at all. But I am suggesting that knowledge is the key. I am suggesting that you do have to be able to make distinctions that others can't make, to make distinctions that are not mainstream. One such distinction, which is the topic for today's discussion, is the idea that real estate is the best opportunity for a startup investor. You know, for the little guy with not a lot of money to invest, but a guy that's looking for the answers. Okay, now, this idea that real estate is the way to go is as far out of the mainstream thinking as anything. And yet, my experience has been exactly this. I know, in fact, that real estate is the most rational and the most attainable opportunity for a startup investor. Somebody with grit, passion, desire, intent, but not necessarily a lot of money. And in fact, I've been able to isolate 7 areas where real estate holds advantages over all other investment vehicles, which is what makes it such an excellent opportunity. And here they are. 1. Real estate offers passive cash flow. 2. Real estate benefits from built-in appreciation. 3. Real estate investment market is accessible due to leverage and OPM. 4. Real estate is an inefficient market. 5. Real estate offers infinite cash flow growth potential. 6. Real estate is the most IRS-friendly investment vehicle. And 7. Real estate education is readily available. Okay. Real estate offers passive cash flow. What do I mean by that? Well, guys, the simple formula that has made millions for hundreds and hundreds of years is simply this. If you own a house which rents for $600 a month, but it only costs $400 a month to maintain, then you get to keep the difference. Okay? It's as simple as that. If you can find a way to buy a house which costs you less than the rent that it brings in, then you are able to generate what we call cash flow. Okay? And from there on, the question is only this. How many of these houses do you need to get to your goal? But this idea of cash flow sets real estate apart from most other investments. Now, I know that some of you listening may try to talk to me about dividend stocks, for instance. Yes, it's true. You can buy dividend stocks, and if you buy enough of them, and you can harvest 4.5% or 5% dividend annually, you can have a substantial amount of cash flow. The problem is that you need a lot of money to buy those stocks. Not so with real estate, which is another subheading here, but the idea is that we invest. I invest because I'm interested in the income. I'm a professional musician. As such, I don't make a lot of money, and so one of the problems that I need to solve in my life is more income. Okay, I'm assuming that many of you listening are in the same boat relative to this problem. As such, when considering investment opportunities, you have to look. You have to look at investment vehicles that allow income. And there are not many of them. Real estate is practically the only investment opportunity you can get into that offers cash flow. Now, you could go out and you could start a business. That's a separate conversation, though. If you're equipped, if you have the skill set to be able to do that, that's wonderful, and you should. By all means, that's the best way to generate cash flow that I know that exists. However, as far as acquisition of assets, of items that generate income, real estate is the key. So the first reason why real estate is such an effective investment vehicle is this idea that it produces cash flow. It contributes to our income and loss statement in a very positive way. Second on the list, however, is this idea that real estate benefits from something I call built-in appreciation. Well, before we get into this any further, let's understand why appreciation is important in the first place. Understand, people invest for two reasons. One, to preserve and increase the value of their wealth, which is to say to preserve and increase the buying power of their wealth. And the other is the income. For me, the income was much more important, and thus I started with this. However, preservation of value, preservation of buying power is also a very, very important element of investing. Okay, now the topic of appreciation in real estate can really be broken down into two separate concepts, one of which is very simple to understand. The other one is a little bit more abstract. The easy part is the fact that there's only so much dry land. as population numbers expand and more people look to purchase a piece of land upon which to build their house, the land that is available over time obviously becomes more valuable. So that's the basic principle of supply and demand that contributes to values of real estate expanding over time. Okay? But more importantly, real estate values in America are tied very much to inflation. In fact, and we'll talk about this at great length in another teleseminar, but what this means to say that real estate values are tied to inflation, okay, is to say that because houses, property in general in America, is generally denominated in dollars, meaning if you want to go and buy something, you have to give somebody some dollars. That's generally the medium of exchange here, okay? Well, what this in turn means is that value of real estate is tied to the value of dollar. And what happens to the value of dollar over time? It goes down. Why? Because of inflation. What is monetary inflation? It's the expansion of monetary or of a currency supply. Okay, so long as our government continues to print money and put money into the economy, the dollar becomes worth less and it takes more dollars to buy anything in the economy. Okay, so this means that prices of real estate, at least over the long term, because of inflationary pressures on the currency which is being used to buy this real estate, go up. Now, we have to make a distinction between saying that the value of real estate goes up versus the price of real estate goes up. Let me give you an example of what I mean. Let us say that you purchased a house in 1950, and let's say that you paid, $33,000 for this house. In the year 2011, the house is probably worth, at least in my part of the world, it's worth, $89,000. Now, you tell me, why is that house worth more? The 2x4s are older. The 2x6s are older. The roof sheeting is older. So is the floor sheeting. The foundation is settled. The electrical is older, the plumbing is older, everything about that house is older, and yet real estate went from, let's say, $33,000 to $80,000, $85,000, $90,000 over the course of 60 years. You have to ask yourself, why? What is making that real estate go up in value? Why exactly is that old house worth so much more? And the answer, of course, to that question is that it's not worth more. It just simply costs more, denominated in the units of currency being used as the medium of exchange, which is the dollar. And the reason for this, of course, is because the dollar is cheaper. So it's not the house that's more valuable. The house is more expensive because it takes more dollars to buy the house, because each of those dollars is worth less. And in addition, of course, just like I stated earlier, the dirt underneath the house has in fact appreciated because land becomes more scarce over time and therefore becomes more valuable. However, comparatively, when you take that differential in price going from 1950 to 2011, and you look at that difference, most of that difference is due to inflation, at least in vast majority of cases. What this means, then, is that chances are very, very good that if you buy a piece of real estate and you buy a good, desirable piece of real estate to begin with, then if you keep up with the repairs and maintenance, then chances are very good that over the long term, over, 15, 20, 25, 30 years, the price of that real estate denominated in dollars will go up. And the average inflation rate over the past 30, 40, 50 years has been something in the neighborhood of 3 to 4%. So that means that if you buy a house for $100,000 today, 30 years from now, projected forward at 3 to 4% annual inflation rate, you will be selling this house for something between $242,000 and $324,000. But whatever that value ends up being 30 years from now, one thing you can basically be certain about is that it's going to be a lot more than the $100,000 you paid for it today. And so this is the second item on the list, the fact that real estate benefits from appreciation. And as such, it preserves the buying power of the wealth which is stored within it. And having said that, real estate is not unique in this capacity because all of the assets that you can purchase are in fact denominated in dollars. So real estate is not the only asset that's an inflation hedge. It's probably one of the best though. It's one of the best because specifically because in relation to income producing real estate, which is positive cash flow real estate assets, you are being paid to wait. You will likely be able to sell this real estate in the end for much more than what you paid for it, but not only that, you are being paid to wait. Okay, the third item on the list is that real estate investments are accessible due to leverage and OPM. Okay, guys, I could spend 3 hours here talking to you just about this subject matter, and I would barely scratch the surface. There's just so much information in here that's going to have to wait. Right now, I am going to very quickly skim the surface. I will do this hopefully using some examples so that you can get the thrust of the thinking here, okay? Okay, here we go. Question. If you have $10,000 in cash, how much stock can you buy? The answer, of course, is $10,000 worth of stock. Next question. If you have $10,000 in cash, how much gold can you buy? The answer, of course, also is $10,000 worth of gold. Question. If you have $10,000 in cash, how much real estate can you buy? The answer is $50,000, maybe even $100,000, maybe even more. So, as we just discussed, whatever asset you buy, regardless of whether or not it has income, but whatever asset you buy is hopefully going to benefit from appreciation due to inflation and scarcity and whatever other forces of supply and demand, okay, free markets come into play. Well, if the asset is going to appreciate in value by 10%, let's say, would you rather this asset is worth $10,000 today, or would you rather it to be worth $100,000 today? Well, let's see. 10% of $10,000 is $1,000. 10% of $100,000, though, is $10,000. Well, then from here, if you only have $10,000 to spend, you're probably much better off leveraging it some way to acquire an asset that's worth $100,000, as opposed to simply going out and spending the $10,000 on an asset which is only worth $10,000. Because the appreciation is likely going to be the same percentage amount. But in the end, the dollar amount of appreciation is very, very substantially different because of the basis of the worth of your asset to begin with. So my basic philosophy around this is that you want to control as large of an asset base as possible. And in the world of real estate, leverage makes this attainable because someone with $10,000 to spend can in fact purchase an asset which is valued $100,000. leverage decreases the cost of entry, which is what makes real estate so priceless of an opportunity for a startup investor, which is my thesis for this teleseminar. We don't have a lot of money when we first start. We just don't have a lot of money when we first start. And as a result, if we needed to have $100,000 at the bank in order to buy that property for $100,000, we would probably never even be able to get into the game. But leverage is what makes it possible to only have $10,000 and to be able to acquire that $100,000 asset. Leverage really, really helps. But listen, you guys, this gets even better, because most savvy investors always try, whenever possible, to borrow even the down payment. Well, this idea of borrowing and the idea of using someone else's money, essentially, to acquire an asset is what is known as OPM, other people's money. And it is a hugely powerful tool that is worthy of a five-hour discussion. We can't do 5 hours, but we will do a teleseminar in the near future on specifically OPM. Okay, this is number three on the list, the powerful advantage of real estate in terms of leverage and OPM. Moving on. Number four on the list is the fact that real estate market as a whole is what we refer to as an inefficient market. Okay, well, what is an inefficient market? What is the difference between that and the efficient market? Well, let me begin by giving you a little bit of history. The efficient market hypothesis is a theory that has been around since the 1960s. It evolved in the 1960s. And it is a theory that a price of a security at any given time reflects all of the available pertinent information, which means that anybody buying that specific security at the same point in time will have to pay the same amount of money. Let's think about this in terms of the stock market, which is what the theory or the hypothesis was developed for, is basically the securities market, the stock market. Okay. But if you think about the stock market and you turn CNBC on and you see that tape at the top of the TV screen, which shows prices of stocks, well, if you think about it, if you wanted to buy one of those stocks, you would have to pay the price that's on the screen. There's no way for you to negotiate a better price. Furthermore, the millions of people on the market at exactly same period in time, at exactly same moment, I should say, in time, would have to necessarily pay the same exact price. It's the same price that exists for every participant in that market, right? Well, the efficient market hypothesis kind of shoots basic human nature in the foot, supposedly. What is basic human nature? Well, basic human nature is that when we buy an asset, we all want to believe that we're paying a lower price than the intrinsic value of that asset. And when we go to sell the asset, we all want to believe that we're selling it for more than the intrinsic value of the asset. As such, the human nature is that we would like to think that we're smarter than the market. Well, if we're to believe in the efficient market hypothesis, then this simply isn't true. More than that, it can't be true, because the price that we're paying would necessarily have to reflect all of the pertinent information. Therefore, it is the true price. You know, I can see the application of this hypothesis to the stock market very, very easily, although the behavior, some would say irrational behavior of the stock market over the past decade, would kind of fly in the face of this hypothesis a little bit. One thing I will tell you is that if this, what I just described, is efficient, then real estate is the complete opposite of that. Think about this. What determines a price of a piece of real estate? You walk down the street and you find a piece of real estate you like, and you go to your computer and you find out who owns it, and you call this person up and you tell them, I'd like to buy your piece of real estate. What are the two factors that are responsible for setting the price? It's what the seller wants to sell for, what the buyer wants to buy for, and it's a reconciliation of the two. We call this in the business the meeting of the minds. Okay? So the meeting of the minds is the only thing that determines the value of real estate. Now, there's a catch to that, however. People sell either because they want to sell or because they have to sell. They need to sell. There's a problem they're trying to solve. Okay? And people buy also either because they want to buy or because they need to buy. Now, here's the reality. If I'm a buyer and I want to buy, meaning that I can walk away if I don't like the price I'm getting, but the seller really has to sell, then don't you think the seller is going to have to let go of that piece of real estate for less than possibly the intrinsic value of it if I'm the only buyer and this is what I'm offering and I'm willing to act on my offer? In other words, I'm willing to perform, but my offer is lower than that which the seller deems intrinsic value to be, or even the market at large deems intrinsic value to be. Those things don't matter. If the seller needs to sell while the buyer only wants to buy, then the chances are the buyer can get a price which is lower than the intrinsic value of the asset. Vice versa, if I need to buy, but the seller only wants to sell and doesn't have to sell, then I'm going to be required to pay what is called top dollar and likely overpay for the asset. Okay? Only in the situation where both sides are equals, meaning seller wants to sell and buyer wants to buy, but there's nobody driven by a specific need, a timeline, or a necessity of some other type, well, then you might determine the true intrinsic value of this asset. But this never happens. Listen to me, guys. This never happens. Because most people don't sell just because they want to. Most people sell because they need to. People sell to solve a problem. They got transferred to another job. They've already bought a different house in another city. They need to sell. They're getting too old to take care of the property. They're getting too tired of managing income-producing real estate. The repairs are more costly than they can afford. The list goes on and on. But the bottom line, people sell 99% of the time to solve a problem, okay? And at least that's how we try to buy, is we try to find those sellers for whom selling reflects a solution to a problem, and then we try to create that solution. Okay, that's how we can get the best terms. But coming back to the efficient market hypothesis, since the price of the asset is reflective only of the meeting of the minds between the seller and the buyer, then there's nothing efficient about that. Another buyer come along, the price would be different, because this price dependent on, you know, my ability to negotiate it. Somebody else might have negotiated an even better price, and yet somebody else could have had to pay more. So this is why the real estate is what we call an inefficient market. Okay? What does this mean? This means two things. First of all, the value in real estate is very much a moving target, just like we just finished discussing. And this opens fabulous opportunities, this presents, I should say, fabulous opportunities to a skilled investor. More specifically, the two opportunities are that you can buy a property for less than the intrinsic value of that property, and then you can, through improvements to either the physical, the structural property, or the management of that property, you can improve upon the value. Okay? Let me give you an example of what I mean. I could buy a property for $75,000, which is reasonably worth $100,000 in the condition that it's in, but within a short period of time, and with maybe $5,000 or $10,000 worth of management, it can be worth $130,000. Because if a buyer comes along who likes the repairs that I've made, making the house so much more desirable to them, that they decide to offer me $130,000 for it. They may offer me $120,000, or they may offer me $150,000. But the bottom line is, I do have an opportunity to create significant value this way. So in this example, my purchase price was $75,000. My management expense was $5,000, so I'm into this property at $80,000, and the value of the property suddenly becomes $130,000, so I just created $50,000 of equity. So by investing a total of $80,000, I can then generate equity return of $50,000, which $50,000 equity return on an investment of $80,000 is 62%. Guys, a transaction like this might take me 2 or 3 months to complete. It's nothing out of ordinary. It happens every day. Furthermore, imagine if it's fully financed, meaning I don't need any of my own money to do this. I'm generating 62% return. It's a kind of thing that happens every day in the real estate market. And if I can rig it up to where I don't need any of my own money, try to do this in the stock market. Try to generate 62% returns on your equity routinely in the stock market. Good luck to you on that. And the difference here is that real estate is an inefficient market. Let me give you an example of a transaction just like this. Several years ago, I bought a small two-bedroom house with an unfinished attic for $24,000. I spent $20,000 on the remodel, which included converting the attic into a third bedroom. So all of a sudden, the two-bedroom house becomes a three-bedroom house. And this, of course, has a lot of value in most markets because in most markets, there are a lot of folks looking to buy or rent a three-bedroom house for whom a two-bedroom house is simply too small because of the size of their families, which, of course, creates value. Well, upon completion of the remodel, the house was appraised by the bank at $70,000. So my total investment was $24,000 to buy it, plus $20,000 to remodel it, which is $44,000. But the appraised value was $70,000. Thereby, I generated $26,000 of equity, which is a 59% return on my investment in terms of return on equity. Right? So that is the power of inefficiency. And by the way, that particular deal that I just described to you is actually much better because, of course, I didn't use any of my money. So I invested zero of my own money and generated a return of $26,000. Now, you tell me, how do you measure a return on investment when there was no investment? I didn't put any money in. I mean, obviously there's other metrics in real estate, which is another topic for a teleseminar as far as how we measure the investment returns in real estate. But the question I'm posing before you or to you is, how would you quantify a return on investment when in fact there was no investment? It didn't require having any money. I invested $0 of my money and created $26,000 of value on my balance sheet. And if you want to look at it this way, this is infinity return. Guys, this is the power of real estate. And listen, you can't do any of the things I've been talking about in the stock market, at least not legally, because the stock market is an efficient market, unlike real estate. You can have insider information you're not supposed to have, which would lead you to know something that you are not supposed to know. See, in the stock market, information is supposed to be available equally to all of the participants at the same time. The price you pay for a stock does not depend on your skill as an investor or on your skill as a negotiator. It is what it is, and it's the same price for everybody unless you've got some information which is not public. But that's the only way you can preempt the action in the price. You can buy at today's price, and tomorrow, because the information finally gets out, the price adjusts either up or down. This is illegal. It's been done, but it's not advisable. You can go to jail for this. Not so in the real estate market. Every day you can negotiate a deal, a price on a piece of real estate that is better than the intrinsic value of that real estate. It's done every single day, just like we talked about, okay? Not only that, but once you purchase a stock on the stock exchange, there is absolutely nothing that you can do to improve the value of that stock. It is what it is. You're just going to hold on to it and hope that it does what you need you to do, or what you need it to do. Again, not so in real estate. As I have shown, there are many things that you can do to improve the intrinsic value of the asset you hold. So number four on the list, the great advantage of real estate market is the fact that, unlike other markets, it is an inefficient market. Okay, guys, moving on. The fifth great advantage of real estate over other investment vehicles is that real estate offers infinite growth potential for your cash flow. This is a very simple one to discuss. We'll do this very quickly. Guys, management of property requires systems. You will find out probably very early on once you get in, it does require systems. But once the systems are in place, then it hardly makes any difference whether you have three houses or 33. Okay? You essentially become the puppet master holding all the strings, the manager of the systems. And other people actually do work for you. So what's required from you is a lot of knowledge to manage those systems. But in terms of time commitment, you can be very, very efficient at how you manage those systems. And you obviously don't have to actually fix the leaky faucet or post the notices on the door or whatever. You can have people doing this for you, okay? Because you are only responsible for managing the systems and making sure things get done the way they get done, you can build a very large portfolio. Or as long as you can find ways to finance real estate, you can continue to buy real estate, okay? There's no limit. Well, and then reason would tell us that if one house brings in $200 a month of passive cash flow, then you can have four houses for a total of $800 a month, or you can have 40 houses for a total of $8,000 a month, okay? And so that's the essence of it. Real estate, because of what it is, allows you to develop a very large portfolio, presuming you've put systems in place to manage that portfolio, which in turn will result in unlimited cash flow growth potential. Okay? So, very simply, number five on the list. Moving on. The sixth reason that real estate is so effective is that it's a very IRS-friendly investment vehicle, meaning that the profits from real estate are taxed a lot less than profits from other investments. Okay, guys, obviously the burden of taxes can be one of the largest obstacles standing in our way. It can be, it just costs a lot of money. I mean, the taxes are expensive. Furthermore, in America we have a tiered tax system. The more you earn, the more you pay. This reality tends to put a lot of people at odds with the government for many different rationales, but whatever, that's not the point. The point is, I don't subscribe to this thinking. I understand it, but I also understand that it comes out of a lack of knowledge. And so, if I may, I'd like to offer you a different perspective. I've come to realize that the tax code is how the government communicates with us. In our society, we can't simply be told arbitrarily by the government, go do this. But at the same time, it's obvious that there are certain activities they would like for us to participate in. Well, economically speaking, it seems logical that the activities the government would want us to participate in are the type of activities which would have a positive overall impact on the economy at large. Okay? Makes sense. Well, put very simply, our government communicates its wishes through the IRS code, through the tax code. If the activity is something they want us to participate in, such as formation of business, investment, purchase of income-producing real estate, investment real estate, then in order to entice us, we are accommodated with lower tax rates on income generated through those activities. Okay? Well, all investments and all businesses benefit from this. But real estate benefits from it more so than any other investment vehicle that I know of. Now, guys, obviously I'm not a CPA. I know enough about these things to be dangerous, but you are very, very, very strongly advised to consult a CPA to really understand the legalities, the ins and outs of all this stuff. But what I will tell you is that it is not uncommon for a real estate investor to pay an effective tax rate of something between 10 and 12%, or even less at times. Now, I know that the capital gains rate has been between 15 and 20% over the past few years anyhow, so that's good, okay, because it incentivizes investment of all sort, but real estate, just through the passive losses, through the deductions, through paper write-offs of all kinds, real estate simply benefits from this to a greater extent than any other investment vehicle that I know of. Okay? There may be some out there that I don't know of, but in my opinion, one of the great benefits of making money through real estate investments is the fact that you get to keep more of it because you are taxed less on it than other investments, and certainly much less than earned income. Moving on. Last item on the list is pertinent to education, availability more specifically of education. Well, I tell you what, real estate investment, an investment of any kind, is an education heavy sport. Mistakes are very expensive, you guys, and education is the only mitigating factor here. Well, the good news is that real estate education is readily available. The bad news, however, is that there are basically only two formats of such education. You're either going to be buying a book, or you are going to be registering for a course online or a live seminar or a workshop or something of this sort. Okay, so both are valuable. And I'm speaking from experience, I've done both. The problem with the books is that while they're very affordable, you simply do not get access to the author. You cannot ask for clarifications. You can't ask him questions. You're basically stuck with whatever you have in your hands, and you have to make sense of it. Okay? Now, the opposite end of the spectrum is the live seminars and to some extent web seminars, because you do have interaction in those formats. However, the problem with them is that they can get extremely expensive. I mean, it's literally not uncommon for somebody to spend $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $7,000 for one of these things. Okay? Well, that creates a problem. It's something you do if you're very committed, but it makes it very difficult to get in because you must have some initial money to spend on this stuff. And the idea behind Just Ask Ben Why is that I want to make this information, at least the basic information, available to anybody who wants it. Hence, the cost of joining the Cash Flow Freedom Builders is only $19.95. I have to believe that at $19.95 per year, anybody who wants to join can join. But I'm also aware, and I need you to be aware of the fact that while this price comes out of the world of printed books. This is what books cost. What I am trying to do with Just Ask Ben Why is provide access to the author. I would hope that you see that there's so much more value than a book off the shelf can provide, but at a price that's equally affordable to a book. Education is the key. It is being able to see what others can't see. You have to see your target before you can ever have any hope of hitting it. The problem is most people don't even see it, so they have no chance of hitting it. Well, education is what makes the difference. Okay? All right, guys. In conclusion, let me just leave you with this. I've identified 7 advantages of real estate. Working in tandem is what gives them such power, what gives real estate such power. There are other investments that are advantageous with respect to taxes. Okay? However, if you can't use leverage to buy them, to get into them, then, you know, it doesn't do you any good that they're advantageous with respect to taxation. You have to find a way to get into them. Well, so there you have 2 elements working together. Well, add another one, the inefficient market piece. Add that piece into the equation, and you realize that you can make your money, whatever little money you have, you can now make it go a very long way with real estate. You can generate returns that are extremely high for the amount of money you put in. Furthermore, you add OPM into this equation, and you suddenly realize you don't even need any of your own money in certain circumstances. Okay? So it's all of these elements put together that gives real estate as an investment vehicle such an upper hand, especially with respect to the beginner, to the startup investors. We didn't inherit any money. We're working as hard as we can, and we're trying to work as smart as we can, and we are making something out of nothing. Okay, it's time to open it up for questions, and here we go.
All right, guys, I earlier today received an email with a question from Starla. She's actually on our call today. And the question is a very good question, so I want to go ahead and address it tonight. The question is, what is better to buy in the long term as far as investment, the single-family homes or the apartment buildings? It's very difficult to answer this question with a blanket answer because it is dependent on your strategy, on whatever your investment strategy is. However, there are certain moving pieces here that apply that are worthy of discussion. First of all, whatever you buy has to make sense today as well as tomorrow. What has happened over the past 10 years is a lot of people bought a lot of stuff, think that appreciation was going to take care of their investment, thinking they can sell it for more than what they paid for it. Unfortunately, when that didn't work out that way, they ended up with nothing. Because the way that the asset was purchased, they weren't able to hold on to it. So that's the kind of the first piece of this puzzle, is that we must buy whatever we're going to do with it. We must buy it so that it makes sense today as well as tomorrow. That's one. The second question you need to answer is, how soon do you need to sell? And what I'm trying to get at is this. It's a lot easier to sell a single-family home than it is to sell an apartment building. Single-family homes cost a lot less money. Therefore, you have a lot more audience. Single-family homes are what people buy to live in, not just investors. investors buy apartment buildings, so therefore your audience for apartment buildings is a lot narrower, okay? But having said those two things, what is your objective? If your objective is cash flow, then you probably need to stay away from single-family homes and go toward apartment buildings, because apartment buildings obviously offer a lot more cash flow. And there's a lot more safety relative to vacancy factor and things like that. When a single-family home is empty, it's empty. And contrary to what people typically say, that when the house is vacant, it's not making you any money. No, guys, when it's vacant, it's not making you any money on one side, but it's costing you money on the other side. You have a mortgage, you have property taxes, you have fire insurance, you have exterminator bills, you have to heat it, you have to cool it. So you're kind of getting slammed on both sides of that proposition, okay? So when a single family is vacant, you are losing money. Therefore, if cash flow is what you're looking for to make changes in your life, to impact your life, then a single family house is not the best. On the other side, if you are looking for capital gains, that is to say, if you're going to buy an asset, you're going to hold it for 3 to 5 years, for instance, then you're going to hope to flip it, to sell it for a profit. Well, then you want that larger audience that comes with the single-family market. Because if you're selling a multi-unit property, you're selling to an investor, okay? There's a lot fewer of us than there are people who want to live in single-family homes. So how do we reconcile those two things? Because this is confusing. There's benefits, obviously, to both sides of this equation, and my business strategy revolves around purchasing small multifamily buildings, duplex, triplex, fourplex. Let me tell you why I feel this way. On the one hand, it answers the problem of vacancy and the problem of cash flow. It is highly unlikely that in a four-unit building at one time that I won't have at least two tenants. And if I have two tenants in a four-unit building, I am pretty well covering my costs associated with holding that building, okay? On the other side, it is not too terribly difficult to sell a small multi-unit building. Why? Because you are kind of looking toward the market of not only the investors, but that homeowner who, especially in these economic times, is very cognizant of his living arrangements costing him money, and so he would like to move into that one apartment and rent out three, for instance, and that would pay for his costs of owning the building and maybe even make him or her a little bit of money. So my personal preference, and this works different for everybody, everybody has their own way about these things, but my personal preference is duplex, triplex, fourplex. It kind of splits the difference between needing to generate cash flow, needing to operate with a safety margin, and also needing eventually possibly to sell the asset and to have the market be as wide as possible within reason in order to sell that asset, okay? So it's a very good question, and it's, again, I touched the tip of the iceberg probably with my answer, but hopefully I've given you kind of shed some light on my thinking around this. But, Starla, thank you for your question, and I'm very happy to continue this conversation on the blog and email and whatever vehicle works for you. Another question I want to touch on briefly is a question that came in from Jessica. And the question goes like this. Houses where I live cost 10 times as much as what you have described. How can I do this? Well, let's follow this logic, you guys. Let's pencil this down. Okay, I described purchasing a house for $24,000, spending $20,000 to renovate it, and the value, the end value, was based off of an appraisal at $70,000, okay? So if I, by the way, I still own that house and I cash flow that house. However, if I wanted to sell it and I wanted to sell it quickly, then I would have put it on the market at, let's say, $10,000 under appraised value at $60,000, and I still would have made a nice profit, okay? Now, let's say you live somewhere where prices are ridiculous, and there are pockets in this country where this is true. So, instead of $24,000 to buy this house, you would need $240,000 to buy this house. Now, instead of $20,000 to remodel this house, let us say you would need $100,000. Although I have to tell you, the beauty of this is that labor doesn't cost 10 times as much or 5 times as much or even 3 times as much. Materials don't cost 5 or 10 times as much. So the interesting thing is, it doesn't really matter if you're remodeling a house, you know, in Lima, Ohio, that you purchased for $24,000, or if you're remodeling a house in Seattle, yes, you'll buy a little nicer stuff for it, but you're not going to spend 10 times as much. But let's just say you will spend 5 times as much, $100,000, okay? So you've paid $240,000 for it. You spent $100,000 to remodel. You're into this deal at $340,000. Let me ask you this. In perfect condition, which it will be after you do the remodel, what's it worth? Is it worth $600? Is it worth $700? I mean, mine was worth $70, so if we stay with that logic of it being 10 times as much, we have to say $700,000. Okay, let's say $600,000. Okay, so you're into it. That's $340,000. It's now worth $600,000. Do you see what kind of spreads we're talking about? I would love to be in that market. I would be doing what my wife needs to do so much quicker in that type of a market. Now, what you can throw at me is that, you know, you need $240,000 to remodel and you need $100,000. $240,000 to purchase, $100,000 to remodel. Yes, you do, but the whole point of Just Ask Ben Why is that I didn't. And these are just numbers. So the fact of the matter is, if you develop a system of how you can finance these transactions, which you can do in any market, then you can achieve your objectives a lot faster in a market such as what I just described, as opposed to a market in Ohio. As I said, I would love to be operating in that type of market. So hopefully I've touched on, I've got to get off the phone at this point because my wife and kids are going to be very, very unhappy if I take too much longer on this phone call. But I appreciate, oh, and by the way, those of you who know my wife know that her unhappy is not a good thing for me health, you know. So I don't like to make her unhappy. So I need to bid our final adieus, so to speak. And I appreciate everybody being on this phone call. I thank you for your time. I understand this is hectic, this is busy, lives we're living. If you have an interest in real estate, I sincerely hope to help people to find the path to financial freedom. Please stay tuned to www.justaskbenwhy.com. You can link up with me on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at @JustAskBen. Please stay in touch, and I will see you on a Thursday night a month from now. Watch for emails, and please come join the blog. We'll continue this conversation on the blog. Thank you much, everyone. Have a good night.
Thank you, Ben. That session was really informative. I feel like I gained a lot and looking forward to the next teleseminar. Have a good night.